Hi, Kat. Welcome back to Book Fair.
Hello, welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome back once again. We are Book Fair, podcast for readers by readers, asking the question, should I read that? This week, talking about our February book of the month, Redwood Court.
Yes, I'm excited to discuss it with you. But first, what are you reading this week?
This was a slower reading week for me. I finished Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Loved it. Very great suspense. I was reading it like in a dark bar in Manhattan when it was raining, and I definitely spooked myself 17 different times, but very readable. Could not put it down. Then I watched a movie, which I had never seen, and loved the
Also
movie.
great.
Absolutely perfect casting. The hottest Daniel Craig has ever looked. Disheveled journalist, hotter than Bond. I stand by
Oh,
that
okay.
100%. Do you
I do
disagree?
feel like it's kind of splitting hairs. Like they're just both very, he's hot in both.
It
But
is
heard,
without a doubt.
heard. I don't
I
know. I
feel.
don't know if I agree with it, but I respect it.
Okay. And then I obviously read Redwood Court. And excited to talk to you about that today. And then I read for my book club here, Sure, I'll Join Your Cult, which is by Maria Bamford. She is a comedian. I didn't know any of her work, except for she was the voice in Cat Dog. Do you remember that cartoon?
Oh, yeah,
I
totally.
guess she's from Cat Dog. But she basically is writing about her experience with mental illness and her experience with a bunch of different 12-step programs and this kind of desire to belong and this coming to understand herself and kind of seen through the lens of all of these different 12-step programs. I thought about the book you talked about, I Am, I Am, I Am, using the different like near-death experiences as moments of her life to talk about. This similarly used the frame of 12-step programs, starting when she was a child, and like her family had been a part of all of these different things. And so going to meetings with her mom and her dad. And then as she got older, the different programs she was a part of. And it was funny and I think interesting. She talks a lot about her experience with mental illness, her experience in Hollywood with mental illness, and her experience going through all of these different things. Like, so many anonymous, like debtors anonymous that I'd never heard of. So many things that I'm like, I didn't even know that existed. And so it was kind of a peek into a world that I don't think I otherwise would have
There's an anonymous for
seen
everything.
into. That's true. There is an anonymous for everything. And she has joined it.
Did it make you think about Cultish at all?
So I kind of hoped that it would because I loved Cultish, but it really didn't. Her experiences, she used them more in like a joking way or a way to talk about her own mental illness than like what it's like to be on the inside of this cult. And most of what she did seem to be beneficial for her and less like, oh, what is going on here? But I found Cultish, which if you haven't read it, kind of goes through the different things that are not technically a cult, but basically are. And
Yeah, things that operate like cults by the way that they use language.
yes, which was so fascinating. And I really enjoyed that and kind of hoped this would feel more like that than it did.
It was more memoir than.
Sometimes I find it difficult to get into a memoir if I don't know much about the person because I'm just less emotionally invested. So I thought it was interesting, but certainly not my favorite thing that I've read. I'll be curious to see how the other members of my book club feel about it tonight when we talk about it.
Yeah, report back.
Certainly will. But those were my reads for the last week and a half.
Awesome. What's next on your list?
I just got this book from the library that I am very excited to start. And it is called The Hundred Years War on Palestine.
Oh.
I had been waiting at the library for a while for it. Just have such limited knowledge about what's going on and feeling really ignorant about that and trying to get some more context. And I'm excited to read this book, and I will report back on if it is helpful or engaging, but I've heard good things about it, so I'm excited to.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Let us know if you feel like it's helpful. We could all use more context on that, I think.
Yeah. I also picked up the new Kylie Reid when I was at the bookstore this weekend.
And okay. I haven't talked to anyone who's actually read it, so.
Yeah, I'll report back.
Yeah, definitely.
And what have you been reading?
Okay, I finished Dune. I really enjoyed it. I know you were kind of iffy on it, but I do think that I really benefited from having seen the first movie before I read it. So I had a vision of the world and the characters in mind. Also, I think I have more tolerance for just like bureaucracy and political conversation. And I think than you do, maybe.
I think that's true.
Yeah. So I didn't find it. I feel like, maybe I just have more patience for that. And if you have more patience for that, you might enjoy it too, listeners. Or if you love the movie, I think you'll probably really enjoy the book. Yeah, I felt like I was in the Dune haze. I was on the spice, for sure. As I was reading
on the spice
and seeing the movie, I was deep in the spice.
I did love the second movie.
I loved it. I know. I thought it was excellent. You know how I feel about Austin Butler, and it was only cemented by this performance.
That is so interesting. I'm not an Austin Butler stan. I think he's a good actor, but I don't like blonde men. I don't trust him.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Have we not talked about this? I find blonde men villainous, which worked for this because obviously he's a villain.
What on earth? Our entire family is blonde. You're naturally suspicious of your own kin. Well. that's possibly something to unpack at a later date. But I would argue he is dirty blonde, so he doesn't feel too familiar that way. But in Dune 2, he's bald, so.
True.
Perhaps this is your entry point for Austin Butler dumb. Okay, finished Dune. Really enjoyed. I will say I'm not going to read the other ones. I'm done. After
there are
one.
A lot
There's
of books.
Six of them. Yeah, and I really enjoyed reading the story and engaging it with the movies a little further, but I have no interest in reading the others.
I've heard Messiah, the next one, is much better. So if you liked the first one, you might really like Messiah. And I think that's the third movie that they're going to make. So,
yeah. And Sam read Messiah and is now reading the third one, Children of Dune. And he said that exact thing, that he felt like Messiah was the best so far.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this does feel like the time to bring up an important aspect of my personality in life that I do feel slightly apprehensive to admit to the internet at large, but I can only avoid discussing it for so long before I become a fraud. But I did finish listening to the seventh Harry Potter book. It's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Yeah. What else did you do last week?
Well, I have an ongoing relationship with the copy team at Pottermore. Pottermore is the team that handles the audiobooks, which are a national treasure, narrated by Jim Dale. He does all the voices. It's really more of a theatrical performance than...
It is wonderful. Yes.
It is wonderful. Their copy team, I don't want to, like, lambast them on the air, But there's not that much work. There's only so many chapter titles to include in the audiobook copy when you're listening to the audiobooks on Apple Books or wherever other people listen to audiobooks. You basically just have the chapter titles. It's like the only text you're inputting into there. And this is the third time I've had to email them and say, you have the wrong title of this chapter. And it drives me crazy.
I just love thinking about like an intern at Pottermore getting emails from like a grown woman being like, it's Catherine again with another copy.
Yeah. No, I literally had to send, I literally said to them, it's me again. Yeah, so they fixed it. If you were wondering, they fixed it.
I was. But, well, I'm glad to hear that at least you're not shouting into the void, that this is a productive use of resources.
Yeah, so they have fixed it. If you listen to the Harry Potter audiobooks on Apple Books, they have fixed the titles. Everything is as it should be.
You have Catherine to thank for that.
Until I discover another error, you never know. They seem to be, you know, missing a thing or two over there. But finished the seventh. Loved it. I do think that this was... It's going to sound hyperbolic, and I'm embarrassed to say that it's not. It's probably upwards of the 30th time I have read or listened to it.
Wow.
Yeah. And somehow, the seventh one gets better each time. I think that it's one that has a little bit more of an adult perspective, and I do appreciate that more on each re-listen or reread. So now I just loop them back around. I just loop back to one. So I'm back on one. I won't update you all on each completion and restart. I make it through the whole series in audiobook about like 1.5 times per year. It's the only thing I listen to. I don't know why. It's become sort of like a strange like ASMR security blanket. I don't know. I'm not an audiobook girly. It's the only thing I do, and it's like my lifeline. I don't know what ticks. This is like you distrusting blonde men. I don't. There's probably some sort of psychological explanation for this, but I don't have it, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're such a nostalgic person, mm-hmm. and these were so big to your childhood experience. I can see how that can be calming to like reconnect you with the thing that first sparked your imagination in a lot of ways, and your love of reading and
totally
your entrance into the fantasy world. And I get it. I will mock you for it, but I do get
it. Yeah, I welcome it. I welcome all mockery. I receive it. Also, if you want me on your Harry Potter pub trivia team,
yeah.
I'm a rock star.
To be fair, you want Catherine on any trivia team.
Well, thank you.
Best trivia partner for sure.
Thank you. So, love the seventh. Whipping around to HP1. And I will say, if we're going to talk about Harry Potter and J.K. Rowling, we can't not mention her despicable political views, social views, specifically on trans people. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I highly recommend. There's a YouTuber called ContraPoints. She has a video called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling. If you don't know what I'm talking about J.K. Rowling's transphobia, you should watch it. Super informative, really helpful, and can be a hard... It's not even hard. It can be really depressing to have to think about art we love that is created by an artist we do not love.
True.
And I don't have any answer to that debate.
Did you buy all of these?
Yeah, I've bought them. Although I've owned them for a long time now.
Yeah, that feels a little like she's not getting paid per listen.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. But I do think that if I'm someone who's going to continue to engage with her work, you got to have a really clear stance on who she is. You got to know what she's doing, and it is not good.
Yeah. So, no, she's a shit person.
Yeah, it's really bad. It's really bad. And so I think the very least you can do, at the very least, is definitely get to know J.K. Rowling. know this about her. Think about where you're putting your dollars. I try to be thoughtful about that. That every time if I'm going to mention this in a public space, I'm going to follow it up with, she's transphobic and a just like pretty wretched human, which sucks for everyone.
Yeah.
So anyways, highly recommend ContraPoints on YouTube, The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling. If you want more info, it's a great listen. Okay. After I just went on a long rant about how I don't listen to any other audiobooks, I am listening to, I think, the only other audiobook I've listened to in the last 5 years.
Okay.
Which I only pulled up because I was looking for like a breezy playlist on Spotify while I was cleaning the house. And it came up as a suggested listen. I didn't realize you could get so many audiobooks for free on Spotify.
Yeah.
And it was just suggested. It's Glossy by Marissa Meltzer, and it's about Glossier.
Oh.
It has a Glossier pink cover, and I had seen it around. It came out probably like 6 months or a year ago. I've seen it around, and I was like, oh, I'd be really curious about that because I followed Glossier's rise, and now they've kind of fallen a little bit. And I was like, oh, I would love to read that, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be good. It just didn't feel like a hardcover I wanted to buy.
Sure.
But it's been a very interesting listen. I would not buy it. I would not read it. I don't think it's worth your full attention or anyone's full attention. But it's a great listen while you clean the house or while you're walking somewhere. If you are someone that shopped Glossier or watched it grow, kind of, we were in college, so I feel like we were the target audience and kind of we're in the thick of its growth. But also, if you're just someone who's interested in business and like tech startups and the beauty industry, especially, it's been interesting. It's dishy and highly readable. It's like just reading like a long Vogue article. I wouldn't Great. Say that it's not dropping any like hot goss that you're not going to find anywhere else. But sometimes there's not actually any hot goss to be had. I kind of think that's the thing with this story in particular. Everyone wants to know like what was going on at the Glossier office in Soho, and was Emily Weiss like this or like that, and what's the tea, and what did this person leave? And sometimes it's just not actually that interesting. And I think that maybe is what happened here.
Okay.
A good dishy read if you like that kind of thing. And then Yes, Glossy by Marissa Meltzer. And then I've been reading, I'm almost done with it, I'll probably finish it today, a novel called Pelican Girls. It's by Julia Malye. I don't know how to say her last name. It's Julia Malye. Julia Malye.
Okay.
It's called Pelican Girls.
Right.
Which is about Louisiana in the early 1700s when it was a French colony. And they essentially had all these men living in Louisiana that needed wives. And so they were rounding up girls in Paris from orphanages and jails and like girls' home, insane asylums, etc., and shipping them across the Atlantic to La Louisiane and marrying them off to colonists. And the book follows three girls. It's a shifting perspective between three girls that end up on the same boat and then how their lives cross each other again once they make it to Louisiana. So the premise, okay, first I should say, this is recommended to me because the author was an MFA student at Oregon State and was taught by my lovely and esteemed boyfriend's mother, my Susan, wife of my Larry.
That's so cool.
I know. And Sue is the best and has the best book recommendations. And anyone who is taught by her is guaranteed to be a star and a better writer. And she had said that this was translated, like when it was bought by the publisher, it was immediately translated into like, I think 30 languages or something. So the publisher is writing hard behind it. Which is just sometimes, you know, with a debut novel, they'll wait and see how the market takes to it.
Yeah, totally.
And so that's a huge plug from the publisher. obviously the premise was super interesting to me. I'm a fiend for historical fiction, especially like untold women's stories, colonial America. I was like, yes, this sounds exactly like my jam. I will say it's not as good as I wanted it to be.
Okay.
But in the way that I'm like, oh, the next book this woman writes is going to be phenomenal. She has the idea. She has the research is really well done. The writing is great. It just doesn't quite work. The characters aren't quite developed enough. It's a little too complicated. Those are just my picadillos, though. I'm really enjoying it.
Okay.
I read like 100 pages of it in the last 24 hours just because like fiending away to get more time with it.
Great.
But I do think that Julia Malier, her next one is going to be excellent. If you like historical fiction, I think absolutely pick it up. It's really interesting. It's time period and a historical, I don't know, it's just a period of time and in a place with subjects that I hadn't ever thought about before. So.
Great. Okay, Pelican Girls.
Pelican Girls. Okay.
Great.
That is all I have for you.
We have a lot of book news that we're going to go through.
Yeah.
The first is a bit of a mystery. So I don't know if you saw this, but Paul Mezcal? I always say Mezcal, and then I believe Andrew Scott was like, it's Mezcal. And Ayo Adebri posted a photo together on St. Patrick's Day. And ooh. Emily Henry, who is like queen of the romance writers right now, I guess the rom-com writers, not the romance writers, reposted the photo of them. And she famously has Beach Read being adapted. So now everyone's going crazy, thinking they might be the stars of the film adaptation of Beach Read.
Ooh.
Beach Read. Do you know Beach Read?
I haven't read it, but I've heard of it, of course.
Okay.
Did you read it?
I read this when I was going through my phase of I cannot be alone with my thoughts. So I listened to a lot of rom-coms when I couldn't listen to music. And it was great. It is about basically a romance writer who no longer believes in romance and an old classmate of hers who she thought hated her. So you have the classic like grump to sunshine, which is my personal favorite trope.
I can also totally picture Io in that role.
Yes. And like he would be such a good, just like sort of grumpy, but actually lovely human being. So the streets are aflame with this possible news because they mentioned, I can't remember what it was.
I love that this happened yesterday. This is hot news.
This is hot news, hot off the presses. But there was some like awards show where one of them had mentioned wanting to be in a rom-com with the other, and all of Twitter was like, yes, fuck yes, please, please.
Wait, now, I do kind of remember that.
Yes. So we are hoping that these rumors are true.
Okay, fingers crossed.
Absolutely.
And if that's the case, I'm definitely, well, I guess the book is being adapted either way. We just don't know the casting.
Yes, the book is definitely being adapted.
Okay. So I'm putting the book on my list because regardless of who's casted, it sounds like it's going to be a hot casting.
Yes. And like Emily Henry writes, obviously rom-coms are like candy, but it's like good candy.
Okay. All right.
It was recommended to me by my favorite rom-com reader, Sierra, if you're listening. We love you. And Emily Henry is one of her favorites, but she has kind of really took off in the last few years.
I can picture the cover.
Yes.
Exactly. Okay. I love this. And we'll stay updated, as I'm sure they'll either confirm or deny, perhaps for the next time we record.
Another favorite piece of news I saw is Lauren Groff, one of our faves, is opening her own bookstore with her husband, living my dream, personally. But she is opening an indie bookstore in Gainesville, Florida. It's supposed to open in April.
Oh, fantastic.
Their selection, they said, is trying to emphasize books that have been banned in Florida schools and libraries, and then also books by Floridian authors, which I thought was very cool, especially considering another piece of news is that 2023 saw record highs of book bannings. They were up 65% from the year before.
Which I know, that's insane.
A huge bummer. And so very cool to see an author that we love trying to combat that in the coolest way possible by opening an amazing indie bookstore. And she said she'd been talking to other author bookstore owners, our faves, Emma Straub, who owns Books Are Magic, that we love here, and Ann Patchett, who owns Parnassus in Nashville, two of my favorite bookstores of all time.
That
I have high hopes for Lauren Groff's bookstore. We might have to make a trip to Gainesville.
It almost makes me want to go to Gainesville.
I know. I was like,
we'd have to go to Gainesville.
I don't really want to go to Gainesville, but we might have to do it at some point.
Now, there's one good thing about having to be in Gainesville.
So true.
Yeah. And I think we both added the news about book banning targets going up this year.
Yeah, real bummer.
It's crazy. The thing that shocked me about it was that it went up, like the individual titles went up from significantly. Wasn't requests for the same books? It's like they're finding more books. Of course they are.
Yeah. As I think I maybe mentioned this a few episodes ago, but my eighth graders are reading Fahrenheit 451 right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very interesting to talk about banning books. And it was very cute as we're reading, because a lot of them are like, why does he want to read so bad? Reading is boring. I'm like, I hear you. Yeah, it is. Why do you think he wants to read? Why should we read? But I had them read an article about books being banned and like what we talked about of having to get a permission slip to read a book by a Black author. And all of them were like, oh my God, when was this? I was like, last month. And they were stunned. So it is at least an interesting conversation to have with students. Yeah. And it is bleak as hell, but glad to know we are combating it in the ways that we can.
Yeah, definitely. And an interesting conversation, and also feels like a critical conversation. Because it's their access more than anyone else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you should always be suspicious if someone doesn't want you to engage with something. And we talked a lot about historically when no one cares about this. like, here, now I'm just going to get on my teacher soapbox.
No, we're going to move
past it. But we talked a lot about historically who has been kept from reading and why you should be suspicious if someone doesn't want you to know something, and how to seek those out, and how nice it is that we have access to so much, like as a part of the New York City Library and the New York City Public Schools. But it's been an interesting conversation. Yeah. So we're glad Lauren Groff is there doing the good work.
Yeah. Thank you, Lauren Groff. Okay. I think we should get into it.
Wait, there's one more piece of book news that I think is really important. And it is that Colin Firth's wet shirt from the Pride and Prejudice movie sold for 20,000 euro. And that is just like the exact kind of news that I like to receive.
This feels like a good use of 20,000 euro. If I was
so true.
Richer than God, this is the type of thing that I would want to buy.
You know, it's like the meme of, if I won the lottery, I wouldn't tell you, but there would be signs. This would be a sign.
Yeah.
I prefer the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, but...
Oh. For some reason, I thought you were a Colin Firth stan.
I mean, I do love Colin Firth, but... I just think there's nothing quite as like tension filled.
I know exactly what you're gonna say. Yeah.
Smacking McKenna's hand in Pride and Prejudice. I remember watching it on my birthday once and literally patting my dog, being like, "Did you see his hand? Did you see his hand?"
Mm-hmm.
So that movie is very special to me, but both movies are very special to me. And I understand if I had just like 20,000 euro to throw into a pond, I would want that wet shirt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So good.
Love it.
Okay. Okay. Now we can get into it.
Now we can move on. Okay. We think we might have kind of a quicker discussion this week.
Redwood Court.
But a good discussion. So this month's book fair book club pick was Redwood Court by Delana R.A. Dameron. We've talked about it a little bit in the past weeks, but it's about a girl named Micah as she's growing up in South Carolina in Columbia. And it follows her life through little, they're almost like short stories, little vignettes, short chapters about her life and her relationship with her family, and then her family's memories. And that includes her sister, Sissy, her dad, who's called Major, her mom, Rena, and then most importantly, her grandparents, who are the patriarch of the family, Wheezy and Tita. And the book starts with a question. It's Micah. I got to commit to one or the other, but I really feel like I've been flip-flopping in my head. We're committing to Micah.
Micah.
Oh, you said Micah?
Okay. I can commit to Micah with you, but in my head it was Micah.
We can go either way. Let's commit. We're committing to Micah.
Micah, love it.
Micah, who is given a school assignment to trace her family's lineage. And her family is Black, and she's asking her grandparents about where they came from and kind of fretting about, how will I do this project if I don't have an immigrant story that I know of? And I liked this quote as she's asking her grandfather, how do I do this project? She says, "What am I made of? That's not quite the question for the project, but it has arrived at my heart. How do I know what I am made of? I asked Tita if we have anything written down anywhere, or if there was something I could bring in to satisfy the impossible for me assignment. What does it feel like to have a thing or things, like our own stories and books and whatever, to hold our histories that future generations can reference?" And that's how the book starts.
I love that too.
And then I feel like the rest of the book is answering that. It's Micah writing her own family history of where she comes from and the stories that her family tells, as if she's creating that physical legacy for her future children or nieces or nephews or whoever they are to look at and to say, oh, that's who my grandfather was, or that's that story, and to trace their own line back. There's our little synopsis. Ash, any thoughts to start us off?
Yeah, some reception notes as well. This was picked for Reese's book club, which is a big deal for books, because many people make choices on what to read based on Reese's book club. She often picks, I think, pretty good books as well, usually by, are they all by women writers? That's her thing.
They're all by women, yeah.
All by women writers, and kind of lifting, I think she likes to lift new voices as well. And this is a debut novel. So she was picked by Reese's book club. And then I really liked this quote from, we both did. We literally both put this quote into the doc from the New York Times review, that reading Redwood Court feels like wandering down a street, stopping to listen to different voices for better and for worse. At the end of the road is Micah, still striving to understand what she is made of, but sensing the part of the answer is rooted in that chorus of voices.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good encapsulation of what the story felt like to me, where it was a little disjointed, and a lot of these like vignettes were published elsewhere. So it is kind of put together in, I think, an interesting way. And sometimes that like disjointedness didn't work as much for me. Sometimes it did. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed getting all of these different voices, and at the heart of every part of it is the community. Her family, the larger community, what it meant to create something together.
Yeah, definitely. I think when we were prepping for this podcast, we both said we really enjoyed the book, but we didn't know how much we had to say about it. And I've been thinking about it, and I think sometimes I read a book and everything I have to say about that story is on the page. Like, the writing is so interesting, or the characters they've created, and the world in that book has swept me up and swallowed me, and that's the experience of it. And then sometimes I read a book that acts more like a mirror and has me think about my own life differently. And has and the main experience of the book is the way that it changes my own thoughts about my life or my own history or my own experience. And I felt like this was very much that type of book for me. That most of my experience of reading it was thinking about my own community growing up and my own family and the stories that my grandparents have told, and a desire to think about those stories and write them down in the same way. Which isn't to say that Dameron doesn't create a world and characters that aren't entirely lovable and engrossing, but I think she does a good job of showing that the real point of the book to me was that there's so much value in these family stories and in your community, and value in remembering them and thinking about them and remembering them through writing them down and retelling them, that it made me want to do that too.
I love that. Yeah, that reminds me, there was a moment in the book that I love. So Micah, what did we decide?
We're just going to use both. We're going to commit. They're the same.
It's the same person.
Yeah.
Micah's very close with her grandfather, Tita. And there's a lot in this book kind of about PTSD, people going into the army and coming back, and Tita has his own struggles with that. But I love this moment where he says he didn't often remember too much from his own childhood. Often outside of walking up and down the forever rows of tobacco leaves, but he remembered the moment his father set him on a bike and pushed him into a new experience. Tita imagines that if he were to die the next day, Micah would always get on a bike and remember that he taught her how to move forward. And I thought that was such a beautiful moment. And so I think especially like grandparents. And I too thought about things that I did with Nana or Baba when I was a kid, because my mom was in school. And so they were taking care of us, and like being able to be close to grandparents and to have that kind of relationship, and to know that your relationship is most likely going to be briefer than like a parental relationship. But having these seminal moments, and it doesn't matter what happens after he teaches her how to ride a bike, she will always remember learning to ride a bike with Tita. And I thought that was just like a really beautiful moment in their relationship, which I loved. It was my favorite relationship of the book. They had such a special kind of thing going that they seemed to really understand each other in a way that nobody else did, that I found just really, the whole book I found very warm.
It's a really warm, heartwarming book.
It takes on some like more complicated themes, certainly. Like, it's not all smooth sailing all the time, but the warmth that emanates from the community, you feel on every page.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think you said earlier that you felt like it was a little disjointed at times. Some of these stories were published independently, and you kind of feel that. It's hard. It doesn't have a linear plot. It's jumping around between perspectives a little bit and timelines. But then I got to the end of it too, and I was talking about with my mother, who read it and loved it. And we both agreed that it was sort of like experiencing your own childhood, in the way that while you're going through it, you don't really know what the clear through line is. And then you get to the end and you're like, oh, it was my relationship with my grandfather. Like, as I was reading it, I was like, oh, I don't really know what I'm supposed to be gathering here. And then by the time I finished it, I was like, oh, this is a book about a girl and her grandfather. And the rest of the community and the family members and the experiences are all meaningful. But really, it's about Micah and Tita and their relationship and how that's refracted through the rest of her world. And sometimes you don't realize that until you lose someone.
Yeah.
That really you were. That's what it was all about.
I like that read of it, especially thinking about it through the lens of her creating this project. Because at first it's the project, and then also she is writing letters to her uncle Junior when he goes to jail. And just giving the updates on the family. And she's like, what would I want to know? I would want to know everything. And so she gives little stories and big stories and this idea that trying to make your life legible to someone else and the ways in which that teaches you about what matters to you.
Mm-hmm.
The stories that come up as you're trying to do this project or you're trying to tell Junior. And I think that makes a lot of sense, that it is how you come to understand your own story. You have to kind of write your way through it.
Yeah. A good reminder too, but I'm super fortunate to be almost 30 and still have two of my grandparents. And we have a shared grandparent who's still alive and probably listening. Hi, Nana.
Hi, Nana. We love you.
We love you, Nana. And I guess this goes for any family member, but especially grandparents that, like, if you're lucky enough to spend a lot of time with a grandparent as a kid and as a teen and as an adult, that their personality quirks and idiosyncrasies feel like such a part of your life that I don't often think to write them down or reflect on them. And in this, Mika has the prompt to think about where she came from, of course, but also writing these letters that she's like really making a record of who these people are. And it made me think, oh, I should write down, like, she had so many good things that her grandparents said. Like, I loved that she remembered or described her grandmother as Wheezy saying about her and Mika that it's just us chickens.
When it was, I just loved that.
I loved that. And both of my grandmothers have such good little sayings like that, that when I hear it, I think, oh, that's what Amy says, or that's what Nana says. And how that just feels normal to my life. That's just a part of the infrastructure of the language of my life. But that I should write those things down and remember them, because it is a part of the richness of who they are and who they are to me and to the rest of their community. It's a very nostalgic book. I know we talked about loving nostalgia, but I feel like I liked it for that reason, where it made me think a lot about being a kid in my own grandmother's kitchen and her talking on the phone while I'm outside on my bike and calling me in for dinner and the stories that our grandparents told us.
Yeah. And the moments that kind of shape who you are as an adult. And what's interesting about this is it is such a coming of age story. And so you don't get her as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And it's different now. There are moments, stories I remember being on the plaza with Nana and Papa that I can trace now to, like, oh, this is why I like this. Like, I remember this moment. Mm-hmm. But that's such an adult perspective. And she is 16 when we end this story. And it is so interesting to have both feet kind of squarely in childhood. And she doesn't feel that. As she turns 16, she's starting to, she really emphasizes that she is becoming a woman. But I think now at 29, I'm like, no, you're a kid.
Yeah.
She is a kid. And so I do think you get such a unique perspective because she is so young, but she's a mature teenager. Not in an unbelievable way, especially considering how much time she spends with adults.
Yeah. And her observations and reflections feel accurate to, like, the age she is in the book too.
Yeah.
Like, you feel like you're spending time with her as a preteen and teen. It doesn't feel like an adult reflecting back on their childhood.
She has a sister. You have this in the note as well. I was so, we got so little from her sister.
Yeah. She has a couple stories about her relationship with her father. There's that relationship is pretty well developed. And then a lot about her and Tita and her and Wheezy, her grandparents. A little bit about her mom.
A little bit with her mom.
Nothing about her sister.
until the very end, which is interesting that her sister comes in at the end. And her sister's 5 years older. So there was always a bit of a gap between them, it seemed.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that there just seemed to be no connection between the siblings. Yeah.
I think a good depiction, too, of so much of your childhood is just, like, you don't get to choose who you spend time with. It's just like where you're sent.
It's like somebody has to take care of you.
Yeah. And it's like if you're
off work early enough to pick you up.
Right. And her sister was working at a certain age, so that then you just weren't seeing them. And like then you just don't. You're just not seeing that person. It's just not a part of your life.
She's not the one watching you. Tita is, so.
Yeah. So then your childhood is you and your grandpa, because that's who you were with. Yeah. Yeah. But it was kind of an interesting choice, because so much of this felt like a memoir and made me think about my life in a memoir sense. Like, I think you could, if I were an eighth grade English teacher, I could see myself using one of these short stories talking about memoir and how we think about relationships and writing about family relationships. But this is fiction. The entire book is fiction. I think it's probably based loosely on her life or some, you know, her own childhood. But I'm like, you could have just not included the sister.
I was like, I'm not really sure what the sister's point. Like, I don't know the sister's purpose in this.
In this case, I'm like, this feels like, oh, yeah, I completely believe that maybe she just doesn't know that much about her sister. But I'm like, you could have just
had her
be an only child. Or have her be 10 years older and at college. And then we're like, okay, yeah, she's just not around.
We don't really need to see her.
Yeah.
I kept kind of wondering where she was.
Yeah, I did too. Or how she doesn't think about her at all. Or so much of my childhood was similar dynamics. It was me and my brother.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really seem to think about her sister that much. And I just feel like I was constantly thinking about my brother. What he was doing, what he was eating for dinner, what I was eating for dinner, if we were getting the same treatment.
Yeah.
What he was doing for his birthday versus my birthday. If he was sitting on the left side of the car or the right side of the car.
Like, quality is very important. Quality is important. Sibling dynamics.
Yeah. You're just always aware of what's going on with your sibling. She didn't really seem to ever think about her sister.
No, she had very little curiosity towards her, which was interesting because you're an older sibling, but I am a younger sibling. And I think especially as a younger sibling, I was, again, aware of every move that my brother was making. And how my moves compared to his moves, and if they were as good or if they were better or if like they needed to be different because I couldn't do what he was doing. And I think so much of all sibling dynamics, but especially as a younger child, like I always had a measuring stick and an example. And it was strange to me that it felt kind of unbelievable to me that as a younger sibling, she would never use her sister as a measuring stick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I
agree.
For
what she should be doing or like how she should feel about something or what path she should take. So like, do you not have siblings?
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I wonder, too, if she did seem to really be treated like the baby of the family. Like she was often at her grandparents by herself.
That's true.
Just doing her own thing with Wheezy and Tita.
And it wasn't explained, like, if when Sissy was younger, she also did that, but now she's old enough to be on her own. Or Sissy was kind of, I think, got the short end of the stick. We don't know what happened to Sissy.
We don't know what happened to her. I'm like, poor Sissy. She probably had her own rich relationship with Tita and Wheezy. We just don't need to know about it.
Maybe the only character who didn't get their own chapter.
Yeah, because we definitely have her dad and her. I don't know
we
that
have we have her dad, her mom.
Yeah, everyone except Sissy.
We have Wheezy and Tita, but we don't get Sissy.
Yeah. I would love to know. So, Delana R. A. Dameron, tell us about this because this is a choice.
Yeah. Why include Sissy if we don't know anything about her?
Yeah. No idea. No idea. Which is all just also underscoring the fact that this is a book about Mika and Tita. To an extent, the other family members. But really, it's about It's about Mika and her grandfather.
And I think her grandmother as well, mm-hmm. who comes in a lot
at the end.
I didn't say spoilers, but spoilers, who comes in a lot more at the end, particularly after Hita's death.
Mm-hmm.
And how that relationship changes and grows. Because we see who's kind of the emotional heart of the community, but Tita was the emotional heart of the family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I thought it was really beautiful how she depicted how Wheezy and Mika knew that Mika and Tita had kind of been thick as thieves for Mika's whole life, and now Tita's gone. And Wheezy and Mika are like, all right, it's just us chickens now.
Yeah, and I guess it's us, yeah.
And both of them are not upset about that, but aware that it's different. And
yeah,
figuring out their own habits and making adjustments and allowances and for each other.
The loss of the most important person to both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was that part especially, I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah. I was also interested, we get very little of her mother.
Yeah.
But her relationship with her mother appears to be somewhat strained. I felt a classic bad mom trope is the mom with migraines, which as a gal who gets migraines, that's always been a bit of a fear of mine, because this comes up a lot. I don't know if you notice this, but in a lot of books, a lot of movies, you have the mother who just kind of like takes to bed.
Right. Who has kind of unexplained headaches.
Yeah. They're like, oh, mom's got her migraines. Nobody talked to her.
Mm-hmm. Keep the blinds shut. No loud noises.
Yeah. I think atonement is the most relevant example I think of all the time. Just like mom with migraines. But that appears to be her mother as well. And we only get one really significant scene with them, and it is very emotionally charged.
Mm-hmm.
Where her dad is out of town, and they get into kind of a fight because she's hungry. We all get into fights when we're hungry. I got it, Mika. She's hungry. Her mother is making her dinner that she hates. And they get into this fight that escalates very quickly, and Mika feels the need to take revenge upon her by breaking the most like emotionally valuable thing to her mother. And that scene I thought was so indicative of what it is like to be a 14-year-old, where you are just like raging with so much emotion and so much anger that you do not know how to handle. And so you do something, and then she sees how it affects her mother, and then is like, oh my God, what have I done? How can I fix this? And I remember being a 14-year-old and doing or saying something, because I'm like, no, this has to go somewhere. This like rage boiling up inside me needs to get out. And then it gets out, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh my God, I started a fire.
Yeah.
Like, what did I do?
No, totally. And I think what she realizes in that moment is that she shatters, the precious emotional heirloom, the alabaster box, to make her mom mad, because she's mad. And then she does it, and she realizes what she's done is she's made her mom really sad, which is so much worse.
Oh, much worse.
It's so much worse. And it's a great depiction of how you learn those lessons as a teen.
Yeah.
That your relationship with your parents is not just like one annoyance for another annoyance, and trading off annoyances and trying to get even on who's more annoyed and who's more mad, but that there are real people with real feelings involved, and that when you hurt their feelings, you do actually feel really bad. That's not what you wanted to do.
So shitty.
She just has this horrible moment of like, oh no, I've made my mom so sad, and there's nothing worse in the world than watching your mom be sad. It's just like, oh God. And And yeah, the mother, it's really well done. Her mom handles
really
it
beautifully
so well.
Too.
Yeah.
Where she's like, you know what? You need to learn to not do that. But she's like, I shouldn't have said what I said. Like, sometimes we get hurt and we all need to learn how to not lash out. And I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And how to apologize as well.
That makes her feel even worse.
You have to learn how to say sorry and mean it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a really effective use of a limited character. Like, we don't see too much between her and her mom. But what we do see is really powerful and meaningful.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, we don't need to see much else beyond that. We get the scope of their relationship and who they are as people pretty well from that one story, especially.
Yeah, there's the great bit where Wheezy tells, I don't remember Mika's mom's name.
Rina, I think.
Rina?
Yeah.
Rina? When she has daughters, she's like, oh, well, good luck. They bring you pain until they have their own daughter and realize how horrifying it is. So enjoy.
Good luck.
Yeah.
Know we've all had a moment with our grandparents where we're like, so easy to have a great relationship with your grandparent. And then occasionally I'll look at my own parent and be like, oh, you're looking at them the way I look at you.
Yeah.
Likewise, they're looking at you the way you're looking at me.
Weird.
Weird.
Yeah, the generations I thought were really fun. It was nice to get that whole mix of the three generations, especially the three generations of women.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have that much else to say about it other than it just made me really grateful for that. I got to see both of my grandparents, both my grandmothers, within a week or two of finishing it. And I just felt so grateful for getting to spend time with them and be with them and hear the way they talk and the way they interact with me and want to record that in my mind a little more thoughtfully. Yeah. Because that's where we come from.
Yeah. I also thought it was a really beautiful depiction of what it means to be in community.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the way the book ended with Wheezy going around to do the like community gathering. Because it starts with when they first buy the house, someone has to pay rent or something. I don't remember exactly what they needed to do.
I think they just have to put down a mortgage payment.
Yeah. And so they go around and they collect from neighbors and they have a fish fry and they do this to support each other. And I love that it ended with them doing it for Mika so that she can have her 16th birthday party. And this idea that she has always been a part of this community, but that community shows up for each other and that community is a choice. And I thought that was so lovely and just nice. It was a lovely book. It went down very smoothly. And once again, like, not to say it doesn't tackle serious topics, but it tackles them like while always being embraced by the warmth of that community, their love for their family.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt really joyful and warm to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would you recommend this to?
I would recommend this to people, one, who like short stories, because while it is not a collection of short stories, I think it does kind of read like one. And I also think people often get on me for recommending sad books. So if you are one of my dear friends who has complained about my sad book recommendations, I have one for you. This is so warm and so joyful. And I think a really nice coming of age story. So I would recommend it to people who like something a little sweeter and a little softer and enjoy coming of age, family stories, and something that you can kind of check in and out of too. Like the vignettes make it easy to pop in when you want.
Yeah, it's a fast read. And I think she's a poet as well. And yes, a lot of the writing felt poetic, but not inaccessible. It's just true. Just really beautifully written.
Yeah, you can tell that she has a like real understanding of language and that each word is chosen intentionally, which I love.
It reminded me a lot of a couple books that I had read as a kid or a teenager that I really love too, probably because they're also coming of age stories. But I think if you loved The House on Mango Street or The Watsons Go to Birmingham or what's another one I was thinking of? Definitely those two. But similar short stories about a kid coming of age and the people that they love around them, you'll love this too.
Okay, my question for you is, if this book was a dessert, what dessert would it be?
I love this question. Okay, in homage to my own grandmother, who makes the best brownies in the world, they are the Ghirardelli box brownies, but somehow they're so much better when she makes them. She swears she doesn't do anything special, but Amy, I know that you're lying. There's something magical happening in your oven that is making these Ghirardelli box brownies so much better. But that's what this felt like to me. It's familiar and beloved, but just slightly more special. Hmm. You always want a Ghirardelli box brownie.
I think ice cream sundae bar at home. Very simple ingredients, but they all come together to create something a little more special. It's the alchemy of all of the things coming together in one place that make it really good.
The alchemy. I love that. Okay. Would recommend for sure. A great one. And if you read it, please let us know what you think.
Yes, we want to know. If you
read it on our recommendation, if you've already read it and you found it yourself, let us know. Pick up a copy from the library. Hit me up in Chicago if you want to borrow mine. So it's a lovely little read.
Okay. Do we want to talk about our next read?
Yes. Okay, so next week or in 2 weeks.
We don't know what we're doing next week.
We don't know what we're doing next week.
I was like, we should we talk about our next episode? We haven't planned it.
I didn't even think about it at all. We'll have something entertaining for you in 2 weeks about.
We'll be ready.
About what you should read. If you have something you'd like us to talk about, let us know, because we're building out our editorial calendar, evidently.
True.
But then in a month, Ash, tell us about our next book club book. We do know. Let's talk about the next book club book with a little more detail, but we also have the book after that. So if you want to, because I have heard this, good feedback, if you want to actually plan ahead and read the book with enough time, if you want 8 weeks to read, we'll give you the title so you can get reading.
Great. Okay, so our book coming out that we'll be talking about in 1 month is Martyr. So the premise for Martyr is that a newly sober orphaned son of Iranian immigrants, guided by the voices of artists, poets, and kings, embarks on a remarkable search for family secret that leads him to a terminally ill painter living out her final days in the Brooklyn Museum. Which, I love the Brooklyn Museum. I live right near the Brooklyn Museum, so this will be a fun one for me. But we will talk about Martyr, which was a highly anticipated book and
And also written by a poet. I think it's the first novel by this author who is a poet. First fictional work.
interesting because Tommy Orange, who we will talk about in just a second, said that this author, Kaveh Akbar, probably might need to look up exactly how you pronounce that, but that Akbar is one of Tommy Orange's favorite writers ever. So that's very exciting for us. Another favorite said the best novel you'll ever read.
Wow. That's a statement.
But I'm so amped to read this.
I've heard really good things.
Authors blurb other books. And I do know you have to take that with a grain of salt because sometimes they don't have time to read this. They're just doing favors. But it does get me very excited. I am the target audience for other author blurbs.
Yes. Also, we love Tommy Orange because we loved his first book, They're There, which came out in 2018. And if you're jumping ahead after Murder, so this will be May, we'll be talking about Tommy Orange's newest novel. It's out already. It's called Wandering Stars. So that's May book. If you read They're There and you loved it, have a feeling you'll love this one too. We're really excited about it. If my memory serves me right, it's shifts in time from I think like present day 2015, 2020-ish back to the Sand Creek Massacre time, which I know because I'm from Colorado. Sand Creek Massacre takes place in Colorado in the 1860s. So it's going back and forth between the 1860s and the 2010s. And
I'm also very excited to read this book. Love Tommy Orange. If you're in New York, Books Are Magic currently has signed first editions for the same price as a regular hardback. And Tommy Orange is a hugely celebrated author, definitely worth having on your shelf.
Totally. Absolutely. Amazing.
I love that we're like, we don't have that much to say.
I knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
This is good, of course. This is the best thing about talking about books is maybe you think you don't have that much to say and then you start talking and you're like, I agree.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we always have a lot to say. But as always,
I love this.
This has been so good.
This is lovely. Blah, 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 blah.
That too. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I have noticed
putting that into words for me.
Yeah. Speaking of my own idiosyncrasies, I've been listening to us, of course. If we're not listening, what else can we expect to? And I have to stop describing things as lovely and as beautiful.
So many things are lovely, though.
I know. If you've noticed that and are like, Kat, you know, maybe you could diversify your adjectives. I agree. I hear you. I don't know if I'm going to improve, but I am at least aware.
That's been the story of my life. I don't know if I will improve, but I am aware.
Yes. That's all I can offer you. And you know what? This has been lovely. It has been. What else?
It truly has. How else can you describe that?
Insightful. This has been insightful and delightful.
Oh, she rhymes.
Not frightful.
Can she keep going?
No, that's all I got.
Okay. I wanted to make the space for you just in case we had a whole thing.
Thank you.
But
all right, follow us on Instagram. Only six entries on this last giveaway. So your chances are only getting better.
It's true.
Which I guess maybe I should stop saying that because it might encourage you not to tell other people.
True. We'll keep giving away books out on Book Fair Pod on Instagram. We also would love to just know what you're reading, or if you're wandering through a bookstore, if you're looking through book reviews or you're on TikTok and you think, maybe should I read this book? Send it to us. We'll read it. We'll review it for you. We'd love to know
what. Or we maybe read it and can tell you.
True.
Don't buy that. Or, oh my God, you have to get that.
And otherwise, happy reading.
Happy reading.
Bye, buddy.
Bye, buddy.